Hello, and welcome back to the Automotive Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the Honda NSX or the Acura NSX, depending on where you are in the world. Throughout the episode, though, I will be referring to it as the Honda NSX. I am in America, and so technically this car would be called the Acura NSX, but Honda is the parent company, and just to keep things simple, that is the name I'm going to use throughout the episode. The Honda NSX is a very cool car. It was one of the first Japanese sports car. It really had some impressive results despite it not being all that powerful. It was very much a sports car that focused on lightweight and a reasonable amount of power instead of just bonkers amount of power, which is pretty normal for Japanese sports cars. So the very origins of the NSX is a different car, a concept car, that was called the HP-X. And this stood for Honda Pininfarina Experimental. So this car was a collaboration between Honda and Pininfarina. And this experimental concept car was pretty crazy looking. And in my personal opinion, it doesn't look that good. It looks like a kid's drawing of what a sports car would be. It's just a wedge with a massive windscreen that wraps over to be the roof as well. I don't call it ugly, it's just kind of boring. There's nothing too meaningful about it. It's crazy, it looks kind of ridiculous, but it's so impractical that in some ways it's kind of boring and just odd looking. I don't know, it didn't do much for me. This concept car was a mid-engine, rear-wheel drive V6, and like some other sports car, the idea behind this was to make a car that could compete with Ferraris and Porsches, but for cheaper. Honda also wanted the car to be usable and practical, something that sports cars are not particularly known for. The HP-X would stay as a concept car and not really move forward, but it would eventually evolve into the NS-X. The NS-X is the name used for the NSX before its release. This stood for New Sports Car Experimental. Again, Honda would partner with Pininfarina to help develop this car. That partnership continued into the development of the NSX. Originally, Honda wanted to use an engine that was already in existence for the NSX. This would keep prices down and simplify everything. Their idea was to use a 2.7-liter single overhead cam V6 engine from the Honda Legend, or Acura Legend, again, depending on where you are, which is a rather mundane sedan. It's not exactly a sports car and certainly does not look like a sports car. Luckily for the world, this plan was changed after testing was performed on the NS-X with this 2.7-liter V6 engine, and it was decided that the new best option was to develop a brand new power unit for this car. They would develop a 3-liter V6 that would push out 270 horsepower. A reasonable amount of horsepower for a sports car, considering they're also planning on making it very lightweight. This engine had some very cool, fancy technology, so we'll dive into that just a little bit. Technically, the engine was called a C30A, and it was a dual overhead cam engine. It would also have VTEC, a technology that Honda is very well known for, except for this was the very early days of VTEC, and the C30A engine would be the second Honda engine to ever utilize VTEC at that time. I did cover VTEC in the episode on the Honda S2000, However, I do want to just recover the basic concept of it in case you haven't listened to that episode. VTEC is a technology that allows two different cam profiles to be used depending on engine RPM. The cam profile determines how long and how far the valves are opened to allow air and fuel in or exhaust out of the engine. So if the cam shaft is designed to open the valve for longer, more fuel or air can get in, or it's easier for exhaust gases to escape. The problem is if you have a camshaft that's very aggressive, meaning that it has the valves open for a very long time, it's not so great at low RPM. So if you're stuck in traffic or you're just kind of going easy, aggressive cam profiles aren't what you want. So what VTEC does is it allows a more aggressive cam profile to be used at a higher RPM and a less aggressive cam profile to be used at lower RPMs. This way, the engine is very happy at idle or in traffic where it just doesn't need those valves to be open very long. But once you get on the open road and you start pushing it and you start having a little bit of fun, the other cam profile will take over and allow the engine to really perform to its fullest potential. The C30A also used variable volume induction system, which is essentially a variable length intake manifold. It's again similar to the VTEC where it allows the engine to breathe better at higher RPMs, but doesn't necessarily allow that much breathing at lower RPMs. This improves efficiency and just allows it to have a better compromise between daily driving and high performance driving. This engine would also be the very first engine that was made for mass production cars to have titanium connecting rods, which is very fancy. The titanium is lighter, and because there's less rotating mass, the engine can rev to a higher RPM. This means that the NSX is a very high revving car with a red line of about 8,300 RPM. Similar, if you notice, to the S2000. It's kind of what Honda does. This engine also had a technology that I had never heard of, and that's sodium-filled exhaust valves. So this technology is not new. It can be traced back to very early days of automotive racing, and the idea is that the valve is hollow and is partially filled with sodium. The sodium has a low melting point and a high boiling point. So essentially, this means that at operating temperature, once the engine is up to where it wants to be, the sodium that is close to the combustion chamber will boil off to the top of the chamber with inside the valve because it's hotter near the combustion chamber. Then it will cool down and become liquid sodium and flow back down towards the base of the chamber within the valve. This creates a cooling effect and allows for more power to be made as it allows the engine to run cooler. The biggest issue with making power is heat. So anything that you can do to cool down the engine or cool down the air that's going into the engine always helps make power. Also, they move significantly away from the concept looks of the HP-X for the NS-X, and I think this is good. I think the NSX is a great looking car. It was inspired by an F-16 fighter jet, which means that the cockpit is very forward on the car and has very much of a dome type windscreen. This means that visibility is amazing out of an NSX. It's not like other sports cars where you can't see anything around you. The NSX is a very open cockpit and really has good visibility. The shifting of the cockpit forward also allows the NSX to have a longer tail, which aids in stability at high speeds. Another interesting thing to note is that a lot of the testing for the NSX was actually performed by Ayrton Senna. Senna is a very well-known Formula One driver, so he really knows his way around a car. And during the testing, Senna made pretty much one big change to the NS-X by insisting that the car needed a stiffer chassis. And this feedback was very much taken to heart, and it led to an increase in stiffness by 50%. This allows the NSX to handle much, much better than it would have otherwise. Senna was involved in all kinds of testing. He tested it on multiple tracks, and so he was really a big part of the NSX. But the one thing that really stood out was his insistence on this stiff chassis. The chassis itself is pretty interesting, as it was all aluminum to make it as light as possible. This was, again, a first for a production car. To give some perspective on how much weight this actually saved, if that same chassis had been made out of steel instead of aluminum, it would have weighed 200 kilograms more, or about 440 pounds more than the aluminum chassis. Most of the suspension was also made out of aluminum, and this allowed another 20 kilograms, or about 44 pounds, to be saved. By 1989, the NSX was released to the public. As I mentioned earlier, they changed the name a little bit by dropping the dash and just making it simply NSX. The car had some other cool features, including independent 4-channel anti-lock brake system, and it also had electric power steering. The car was a success and was used within motorsport a good amount. Obviously, this car has gained a large following and has a pretty large reputation. I normally do not talk about specific articles I use for the research of a car, but for this episode, I came across one in relation to the NSX that I think is worth a full read on its own. It talks about why the NSX is a car that people fall in love with. This article will be linked in the description of this episode. The key points that I want to mention in the episode is that the NSX is a very well-behaved sports car. It is not overly powerful, or always on the edge between being in control and being completely out of control. Honda created a usable sports car. And unlike other sports cars, like Ferraris and Porsches, the NSX will not break the wallet simply to maintain it. It is simple, it is reliable, and parts are reasonably priced, at least compared to other sports cars. The downside of this is it's a little bit boring. It's not a snorting demon of a car with a mind of its own and a 1,000 horsepower beating engine within it. To make matters even worse, the transmissions used for the NSX tended to have very long gears. Now, long gears are not a problem on their own, especially if you want to hit high top speeds. That's what you want. But long gears do limit acceleration, and it makes it harder to get the engine to high RPMs quickly. And remember that the NSX engine has two systems that depend on high RPMs to give the full performance of the engine. The VTEC and the variable length intake manifold both need to have high RPMs to switch over into a mode that really lets the performance of this engine come out. This means that with those long gears and the difficulty that comes with them to getting the engine into high RPMs, most of the time you're never going to hit VTEC or the more high performance manifold length. And so during daily driving, and most of the time, probably 90% of the time, you're not going to be getting everything you can out of this engine simply because the transmission won't really let you. And so this leads even more to the NSX being a slightly boring car. But the flip side of this is that the NSX was a car that was meant to be driven, and it is driven a lot. Their reliability and their relative cheapness means that these are cars that can be basically driven year-round despite them being, quote-unquote, sports cars. A side note of this is that aluminum is very strong against moisture and salt, so even winter driving is a reasonable thing to do in an NSX. This is completely different from most other sports cars that are garage queens that never really leave their heated, special little place to live, and they're not really used. That's the difference between the NSX and pretty much most other sports cars. The NSX was designed to be driven and is driven. It is the daily driver of a sports car. Yes, it's not insane, it's not going to blow your socks off, it's not going to be scary to drive, but that's the point. It's fun to drive, and it wants to be driven, and everything about it simply allows it to be driven. There are many editions of the NSX. There were lots of high-performance versions and other little special editions to celebrate Honda's success in motorsport. A few that are worth mentioning is the NSX-R. This is meant to be a full-bred racing car. It has stripped interiors to save weight and revamped engines. The sound deadening, audio system, spare tire, air conditioning, and traction control were all removed. They got lightweight carbon Kevlar racing seats made by Recaro. Lighter forged aluminum wheels were also added, and even the standard shift knob was replaced by a titanium one. That might be more for looks, but I guess it maybe saved a little bit of weight. All of this combined saved a total of 120 kilograms, or 264.5 pounds. This gave a total weight for the NSX-R of 1,240 kilograms, or 2,733 pounds. Suspension was also made more stiff, and additional brackets were added to prevent oversteer, which the car was kind of prone to during high-speed cornering. They even improved the issue that I talked about just a second ago about having really long gears in the transmission. The gears were shortened to allow for better acceleration and also allowed the engine to perform to its full potential as it reached high RPMs quicker and got that VTEC going and really gave the oomph that the engine had. Sadly, these NSX-Rs were only made for the Japanese domestic market. The North American market got a version that was called the NSX-T, which had a Targo-style roof, which essentially is a removable roof to make it a convertible. This is not a great option, as it reduced the rigidity of the chassis, so reinforcements had to be added, which resulted in a heavier car. And for a time, the NSX-T was the only model available in the North American market. You simply could not get the base NSX. In 1997, the NSX got its first engine upgrades. Thinner cylinder liners were used to allow for an increase in displacement, up to 3.2 liters from the original 3 liters. Exhaust manifold was significantly improved. It went from a cast iron manifold to a stainless steel manifold. Not only was this lighter, but it also significantly improved exhaust flow. These two things combined created a bump in horsepower of about 20, which put the total power up to 290 horsepower. During this time, other performance versions were released. This included the NSX Type S and the NSX Type S0. Both of these had stiffer suspensions and were made lighter, pretty much the standard performance versions. Although, interestingly, to make them lighter, Honda created a new battery that was smaller, and they reduced the thickness of the glass in the car. In 2002, the next generation of NSX would be released. This version would look pretty similar to the original one, but would remove the pop-up headlights. This second generation would also get a performance version. They stuck with the same name, they simply called it the NSX-R. And again, they made it lighter than the base NSX, and the engine was given very precisely machined components for its rotating assembly. These impressively manufactured parts were extremely well balanced and allowed for the engine to smoothly rev very high and very quickly because the balance was so perfect there was no mass throwing it off a little bit, so it was able to just rev up very nicely and very smoothly. Interestingly, Honda claimed that the NSX-R produced the same amount of power as the base NSX, but most people don't believe that. The people that have test driven these cars and compared the two say that no, the NSX-R definitely has a significant amount more power. The exact power figures are unknown. And despite this car being somewhat based on a pretty old chassis and a pretty old car, it was impressively fast. This car was able to put up a time around the Nürburgring that was equal to the Ferrari F360 Challenge Stradale, even though the NSX had 100 horsepower less than the Ferrari. So it was a very well-handling, just all-around very drivable, usable sports car, and it's pretty impressive what Honda had accomplished. The NSX would compete in the 24 Hours of Le Mans and got okay results. It competed for 3 years in total, and its best results would happen in 1996, where it would finish 16th overall and take third in the GT2 class. The other years, the NSX really didn't do super great, and either didn't finish at all or finished pretty far back in the standings. The NSX would also compete in Super GT with a good amount of modifications, including a change of how the engine was mounted. Originally, the NSX has its engine mounted transversely. However, for GT2, the engine was switched to be mounted longitudinally. This and some other modifications essentially allowed the NSX to either be turbocharged or not turbocharged, depending on the rules of the race it was competing in, so it could be adjusted to have the best chance of winning. This first NSX would end production in 2005, and then there would be no NSX for quite a while. The next NSX to come out wouldn't come out until 2016, and this NSX is still being produced today, although it is a very different car. It not only has different looks, but it is, in fact, a hybrid. It's a very powerful hybrid. It's powered by a 3.5-liter twin-turbocharged V6 and three electric motors, which give it a total power of 600 horsepower, so it is definitely no slouch. The transmission is a 9-speed dual-clutch automatic, and it has a 0-60 time of 3 seconds. That's more than a second faster than the older NSX, which had 0-60 times between 4.5 and 4.8 seconds. And while yes, this NSX is impressive in the specs, it loses something, at least for me. It moves away from that core idea of cheap Japanese performance. That's what Honda did so well, and lots of other Japanese manufacturers, is they used impressive technology like VTEC to give power at a reasonable price. The NSX wouldn't break your bank, and it would be fun to drive, and it was reliable, and it pretty much was a good combination of technology and drivability and performance with reliability. The newest NSX doesn't really have that feel. It looks good, it looks very modern, it looks very hypercar, but it's also sold as a luxury car. It's expensive. It cost $160,000. It's not that simplistic. It's more of a luxury car to be shown off than the original NSX, which was a car to be driven. I'm not saying the new NSX is a bad car, and it's very impressive, and it looks good. It just is not the old NSX. Perhaps that's just the nostalgia speaking from me. But I do feel that the newest NSX is a different breed of car, and that there is no real, true successor to the first NSX available. The cheapness, the performance, what it was meant, what it was representing, doesn't really seem to exist today in any car that I can think of. If you can think of a car that has this same core values of the NSX, being cheap, being really high performance, being reliable, and being fun to drive, let me know. But I personally can't think of any off the top of my head. That isn't to say, though, that the original NSX is perfect, and it's not even that cheap anymore. I mean, prices range from $60,000 to $90,000 for a pretty old car. So I'm not trying to put the NSX on a pedestal and claim it is the ultimate perfect car. Every car has issues, and the NSX definitely has some. It's oversteer issues, It's not that cheap for an old car. I personally would probably take the older NSX over the newer NSX. That's going to be it for the episode on the NSX. I hope you enjoyed. If you'd like to support the podcast, the number one way to do that is to leave reviews and to follow the podcast on whichever platform you are listening. You're also welcome to follow me on my social media. My Instagram is automotive.podcast. My Twitter is @automotivepod, and my Facebook is @automotivepodcast. I will post car facts and will let you know about upcoming episodes. Other than that, again, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed, and I will see you next week.